The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone when he's not on the microphone. He's playing a song, and when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone, and then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't! Yes, he did!
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
I thought it was Mitch.
Do Hot like Mitch Williams? Uh-huh. I used to know what it meant. What does Do Hot mean? It means you hate me. I used to know that. it says it's a weird translation from German. Do Hot means you have, but it can also mean you hate.
Hmm.
So basically, the guy's coming out saying, you hate me, I guess.
Doesn't sound like something a German would say.
No. Well, they're usually, you know, my German friends are always like, laugh a minute. LOL.
Your German friends?
All my German friends. I actually grew up, one of my best friends growing up was, how about this? He was born in Tehran, but raised in Bonn, Germany. He moved to Germany when he was 9, lived there until he was 15. And then moved to America. I met him right after he moved to America. I met him at a Pizza Hut. You know, we met Jason. It was really awesome. We were playing Street Fighter 2 together, and I ran out of quarters, and then he ran out of quarters, and he goes, hey, let me...
Then you started fighting.
Right? And he jogged home and asked his parents for more quarters and came back and shared his quarters with me.
Wow.
And we played all afternoon, and it was love at first sight. Really, really good
guy.
Is he
dropping dimes?
He's dropping quarters. Yeah, how about that? Back when you had to put the quarter on the machine.
Yeah, that let everybody know. Even though there might have been 12 lined up there, they just knew. Everybody knew whose quarter was.
Everybody knew whose quarter it was, even though they looked and said, hey, that's my quarter, second from the left.
Yeah.
Now it's like you see a quarter. I remember you find a quarter. God, the old man talk. You find a quarter like in a couch or something. You're like, hey, put it in your little jar or something. Maybe your parents have a little, my parents used to have a water jug, like that you'd put, what's it called? Like you put on a water cooler here at work. You know the big jugs?
Sure. Like Culligan Man?
Yeah. Don't isolate that. And they would put all their, they put all their silver in it.
Okay.
So dimes, nickels, quarters, then the occasional 50 cent piece back. Uh-huh. Right, man.
Where would the pennies go?
I don't know where the...
Heaven?
I know I do have a memory.
Look,
of,
I found the place your life is going, in the garbage.
I know that my mom at one point had a penny roller, right? She had a penny roller that she'd roll, like you roll 100 pennies and then it wraps it in the little thing, the paper, to make a dollar.
I think they're 50 cent.
50 cent what?
I think
yes, those 50 cents for the pennies.
It's too much.
Oh, it's not a dollar?
No.
Oh, I never knew. Even more like what a load of work. And then
50 cents.
The best thing ever, which did not happen when I was a kid, oh man, I could have used this, was the Coinstar, where you dump the coins in and they just give you
how
a little
receipt.
How much
do they take?
I think it's like 3%, but I could be wrong. But it's whatever. I would have collected all the pennies. Just roll it in there, get your receipt. Anybody over 35 years old knows this. There was nothing like a Saturday late morning. Whatever arcade was near you, if you had one, or in my case, Crestview Bowling Alley, and a $10 roll of quarters.
Mm. I always wanted that belt that had the
little
arcade guy had or
the
gal.
Oh, like, yes.
If you had a dollar somehow and you gave it to them.
There was an arcade guy that would come around?
Yep. Yes.
Yep. So... I don't even know if they
$5 worth of quarters, please.
That's right.
Yeah. And he'd go, oh, if he had five. No, whoever had five.
Ka-chink, ka-chink, ka-chink. Yeah. And he'd have them all in his
hand.
Here you go.
Hours of gaming.
Oh, my God. That's forever.
But if you had a buck, that was huge.
It was huge.
Four games. And then when games started to become 50 cents. Oh, man. But those games were Elaborate.
I remember the first game that I remember.
Dragon's Lair?
That's exactly right, Jason. Dragon's Lair was 50 cents, and it was like the most cutting-edge graphics ever. Yeah, and they
it
were.
Was pretty intense.
But then the actual gameplay was you're just guessing which way to turn the joystick.
Yeah, is that what it was?
Yeah,
right
you
left?
Have to time it right or left, and if you don't, you turn into a skeleton.
Yeah.
I hated that stupid game.
Yeah, but I played it.
You had to be strategic because if you had a good amount of quarters, you could seek out new games to try.
Right.
But if you didn't, you had to budget and only play the ones you were good at.
Right, so you could be there for a while.
Otherwise, you're done.
Yeah, it's like straight to Pac-Man.
I remember trying out Commando, the video game. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while to know where all the power-ups are. I don't have that kind of money.
So, arcade full of games, you've got 25 cents. Where are you going?
Like
back then.
Like, full of every game of all time. Like, I got you. Probably Street Fighter 2. I got to the point
where, for a while.
With the exception of Zangief and Dhalsim, who I know a lot of people love to play, but with the exception of those two, I could pretty much beat the game on a quarter with just about everybody else. But I wasn't very good in... The problem was is that I'd be doing the thing where I want to beat the game, and then some kid comes in and, like, challenges me. And I'm like, I don't want to – I'm not – I wasn't the guy that – I didn't like fighting other people on Street Fighter 2 because I would then actually want to fight them because I would get very – I would get video game angry.
Yeah.
And
the montage would start.
Exactly. Much like it started last night after the first quarter between the Pacers and Bucks.
Speaking of quarter.
Who were trying to knock out Milwaukee. They were. And, did not work out whatsoever. They had a nice, decent lead after the first quarter. But that didn't work out. Here's old Beasley with a fourth quarter three.
Middleton, six to shoot, gets it to Beasley. Boy, he is lights out tonight.
He was lights out last night.
Yeah, he was.
He was. Chris Middleton, who had a great game, tied with Bobby Portis for team high 29, knocking out the Pacers.
And the only question now is, will Doc have his full boat and healthy lineup with Lillard and Giannis on tap?
Yeah, knockout punch 115-92.
Sure, they wanted a knockout punch.
Yeah,
that fan,
the angry, not angry, happy fan.
Yeah.
Right behind the. I hope that doesn't become a thing.
Yeah,
because you got access to them. You just buy the tickets behind the person. Here's your final call.
A convincing game five win. And they get this series back to Indianapolis for game six.
From the 916, just want to go back real quick because I just saw this text. I imagine Mike Trout's mantle would house his three MVPs, nine Silver Sluggers, AL Rookie of the Year, and two All-Star MVPs. But yeah, other than that, there's nothing. It sounds like a Mike Trout fan. Look, nobody was saying...
Go outside, nerd. Hmm? Get out. Go.
No one was saying that Mike Trout is a failure or is not a, it's quite the opposite.
Right.
It's that for his, I think you could make a very good argument that Mike Trout, if you took everybody at their best, Mike Trout could be, or certainly in the conversation, is the greatest all around player to ever play the game.
There's been thoughts of that. And I think the spirit of the question we had was, has it been his injuries or really the, like, he doesn't have, like, these playoff moments.
No.
These iconic moments that you go, oh, I remember. Like, Trout has done all the things he needs to do individually.
Right. That's exactly right.
But, and also now missing games hurts what the lore of baseball is, too, of just racking up the stats. And so at the end you go, yeah, I didn't get all that, but look at how many home runs and hits and stolen bases and gold glove, whatever, all that stuff. But he keeps missing games, too, now.
And that's the thing. Mike Trout in the playoffs.
Does he have one series?
Has played three games,
yeah.
And he's batting .083. You are automatically disqualified from the GOAT conversation if in your career you've played three playoff games and have batted .083. You cannot be in it. Now, Mike Trout will again.
I feel like he would be great in the playoffs, but you got to be
too.
Like Matt, we talked the other day about Madison Bumgarner, who has got one of the great postseason resumes ever.
That's right.
There's better pitchers than Madison Bumgarner.
Absolutely.
But not many better in the postseason.
No. And even the, some would say, obviously controversially, but the all best all-around player to ever play the game was Barry Bonds. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
Even he had a big-time playoff.
Oh, he was bad until the end, right?
Absolutely. And then he finally woke up in the Angels series mm-hmm. that they lost. But at least there were some moments for him. Mike Trout's signature moment is he's batting .083 in the playoffs. Right. Now, injury, sure, but also choosing to play in that market for that team, it's going to hurt his legacy. Mike Trout may end up being the greatest all-time what-if.
Yeah.
In baseball history. So, he there's no doubt he has accolades. There's no doubt that he is a wonderful, wonderful player, but can't be in the GOAT conversation. And neither can Tyrese Halliburton if he keeps – I know we're jumping back and forth. Going back and forth on these games with Giannis and with Dame Lillard. Dame Lillard seems imminent he will play in the next game. Giannis a possibility. And Tyrese Halliburton, he knew Milwaukee was desperate.
I think we just got to understand that, you know, they're a team that's on the brink of their season being done. And, you know, they're playing desperate. They're playing hard, you know, as they should be. And we, at the end of the day, they outcompeted us tonight. They played harder, played better. You know, they kind of just dominated us in every facet of the game tonight. So we got to be better. Starts with me and that first group, but we just got to be better top to bottom.
We'll take a break. When we come back, 3 for Madness. Yeah, we'll ask a Cavs magic question. Who's most likely to come back in their series? And Kristaps Porzingis. Ouchie. We'll get to all that. 3 for Madness next.
3 questions, 3 answers. It's 3 for Madness on the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
Here's question 1.
Oh, God. Remember I told you Kenny called me earlier?
Yeah.
So he just texted me. And I texted him back. I won't say what he said, but a cool thing happened to him. And I said, awesome, I'll call you later, brother. And I don't know how this happened, but I then texted him a grandma emoji. And I don't want to do the whole thing where, like, what do you do there? You go back and say, oh, hey, I meant everything except that. You ever do that where you type something to someone, but you accidentally put a question mark or something at the end? And then you got to text him back and be like, oh, not the question mark. What do you mean not the question? I mean, not everything I said, but the question mark. Yeah. And then it's this big, like, who's on first thing?
Right.
Does he not have an iPhone?
He does.
Oh, why don't you just edit it?
Oh, can I do that?
Yeah.
Hey! Hey! That's right. And check mark. Hey, I forgot you could edit texts.
That's why I don't have an iPhone, so I know that you're not editing texts.
Yeah, you're the
it's
guy.
Not AI.
Yeah.
One of my most embarrassing moments was trying to get Tim Ryan on one of the shows I was working on. And so this is back when you called people. So
why were you laughing?
I'm like, hey, Tim, can you come on? And I kind of like mess up. I was like, ah, crap. And so I hit 4 to restart the answering machine, and it goes, boop, boop, boop. And I'm like, well, okay.
Did you not know? Because it wasn't restarting.
It wasn't restarting.
Yeah.
So he just heard me sound like a maniac, hit the button 4 times, and then just be like, all right, so if you could call me back.
You're like Mikey and Swingers leaving the messages for that one girl. Yeah, it's happened to the best of us. 3 for Madness. Christopher Law, question 1, please.
Has the Cavs Magic series quietly been the best of the first round?
No.
Not so quietly.
No.
Not loudly.
I think it's in my opinion, I'm trying to think, it's between two. I think it's been the Sixers Knicks, but the Pacers Bucks is right there. I mean the Clippers and Mavs are tied up at 2,
yeah.
But I don't know. Me personally, I've watched it. It just hasn't grabbed me as much as these other ones.
You know, some of the best games were the Lakers Nuggets.
Yes, you're right.
It went in 5.
You're right.
There was 2 buzzer beaters, basically.
Yep.
A lot of close games.
Yep.
Those were good games.
I also, honestly, went just as far as entertainment goes, Timberwolves Suns, even though that was a terrible series, but just seeing the emergence of Anthony Edwards and all the kind of trash talking back and forth, that was fun. I like it when there's, you know, I don't need all the extracurriculars necessarily, but in the playoffs, it's a little bit different.
Right.
I want to see teams get chippy with each other. I want to see them go. I have a weird feeling, Jason, that there's still a fracas to come in the first round.
Oh.
Someone's going to frake.
Frake eye.
There will be frake eye at some point. Maybe just a fracas.
Okay.
But
yeah. For that.
Look, Cavs magic is 3-2. Last night was a good game, close game. But as we pointed out earlier, every game in the series, with the exception of last night, has been pretty much a blowout.
Yeah, and if that is a magic win in game six to get us to a game seven, that's exciting. But it hasn't, you know, I don't think it's been that amazing, that series.
Three for Madness, question two.
Question two.
Most likely to come back and win their series, Bucks or Sixers?
Well, it's tough with both. I don't think the Sixers are going to beat the Knicks. I don't. I don't think they're going to beat the Knicks three in a row. I think the Knicks will get one of these next two. But I also don't think the Bucks can beat the Pacers without at least one of Lillard and Giannis. But it sounds like they're coming back. So I'm going to give the edge to the Bucks. Now, I could see both the Pacers and Knicks advancing, and neither comes back. But if you forced me to choose, I think it would be the Bucks.
Yeah, I just think in general, the Bucks. I think the Bucks are the better team than the Pacers when everything's right. Now, they haven't had everything right, and the Pacers have earned this series lead. But for them to leave the door open with that loss yesterday, and the first time we said earlier, the first time ever a team has not had their top two scorers and won a playoff game. That's a big-time win for the Bucks, so I think they could do it. I think that's the one. If I'm picking one, I think it's them.
Question three, please.
Question three.
Kristaps Porzingis is out several games due to a calf injury. Will this affect the outcome of the Celtics-Heat series?
No, but it could very well affect the second-round series. Mm-hmm. Now, they get a little bit lucky on paper because they're going to play the winner of the Cavs Magic. That's not on paper, I say again, the toughest matchup you could get. From what it sounds like, you know, he's dealing with the same calf injury Giannis is. From what it sounds like, it's a several games. Can't imagine he would miss the rest of this and the next series and not be available for the Eastern Conference Finals. I think Boston is good enough to get through the Heat and whoever they face next without Porzingis, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to impact this series per se in the spirit of the question, but let's also remember for Miami, Jimmy Butler's still out. News today yesterday breaking that Jaime Jaquez would not play today, Terry Rozier is out. Miami's really injured, and so I don't think Porzingis, it's a big deal to Boston, but I don't think it's a big deal for this series specifically. But as they go on, yeah, I think it could impact them. His defense has been the biggest difference, I think, and he stretches the floor. He's such a good fit. That's a player where I kind of lost a little bit on Porzingis. I'm like, yeah, he's okay.
Yeah.
And then he goes there, and you just go, wow, that's the fit. Like that, I would not have figured would have had the impact it did, and it's been amazing for Boston.
It's not an exact science, Jason, but it goes back to what we always talk about when we go back to those 2000 Kings teams and the Pollards and Vernon Maxwells and all that. It's not the same, but you'll remember it wasn't that long ago that Oklahoma City sent Al Horford home three quarters of the way through the year, like, yeah, we're just going to play the youngsters. And you're sitting there going, yeah, it's Oklahoma City. They're rebuilding, but also, is this the end of the road for Al Horford? Well, it was absolutely not the end of the road for Al Horford. He's been a vital cog to them.
Yeah.
He's put together a great end of his career over there. And a lot of that is just that system and the people he's playing against. I think with Porzingis, he was kind of lost in the shuffle and has rebirthed himself in Boston with those surroundings.
Yeah, I know a little later at 9, I think when we're talking about like finding a player that would fit for the Kings, this would kind of be the example. Again, there's better players in the league than Porzingis, but fit to that style, to the rest of the complement he is to Brown and Tatum, defensively, offensively, Holiday, it's perfect. And so that's, to me, again, better players than Porzingis, but his fit on the Celtics is right on.
It absolutely is. We have a few minutes here before we move on to the Kings grades, if you will. We'll look ahead to everything coming up tonight. But just let me ask you in general, Jason, how do you rate the first round of the playoffs so far?
C.
I think that's about right. I don't hate them.
No.
They just haven't, and the overall look, I love the OKCs and the Minnesota's advancing, Indiana coming up, you know, Orlando, Cleveland. Like, there's a lot of small market representation, yeah. And you've got, you know, we talked about it before, just a bucket load of stars out. I mean, I actually haven't counted, but what are we talking? Upwards of right around double-digit Hall of Famers probably mm-hmm. that are on the beach?
Yeah.
And although I'm a champion, as you are and so many of our listeners, of not just small markets, but, hey, I don't need it to be LeBron and Steph all the time. Here's the brass tacks. They are also big, superstar, sure. charismatic. You know, it's up to these smaller markets and these not superstars yet to really establish themselves on the stage and make us care. So far, as you said, you could argue the Nuggets and Lakers was the most competitive series, even though it was a five-game series. Bucks, Pacers, Knicks, Sixers have been good. It's really been kind of a boring first round, I think.
Yeah, and it, you know, we're a year removed from, and obviously we felt like we were so close to it, being the Kings and Warriors. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, this feels like this is a big deal, but is it because we're in it? Like, is it too close to us? And then when everybody afterwards was talking about how great that series, the most watched series, like, oh, no, that was great.
Yes.
Like, people were really into that. So, I mean, a year ago, we were in the center of probably one of the best first-round series. And this year, I don't know what the best one has been. And it hasn't had that same kind of every game draw. I mean, we had a suspension. We had Draymond looking like he wanted to fight the whole crowd.
Yeah.
Close games that came down to the wire, road wins each side. I mean,
did we ever do a postmortem on the season and decide whether or not that first round matchup between the Warriors and Kings was the most entertaining series of the playoffs?
I don't remember.
But I don't remember either.
Was.
I think it might have been.
Yeah.
And I especially hesitate because, you know, the bias.
Sure.
I want to be careful of that, but. But
people were talking about that series. And like,
absolutely.
Can't wait for Kings Warriors next year. And that was outside of Sacramento
and
San Francisco.
And they were the ratings were through the roof.
Right.
And, you know, look, that's staff and the whole, I get it. Kings didn't hurt, though. That was a wonderful series. There's nothing approaching that series. Right. Now, that being said, we do know this. There is still room for the first round to maybe start with a bit of a whimper and then end with a bang.
Oh, for sure.
You know, if we get two or three seven-game series, maybe a couple of testy exchanges, some amazing buzzer. Yes, there's still room to salvage the first round, if you will, but I don't know. So far, it's been really pedestrian, I would say. I think it's been rather pedestrian. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will grade your Sacramento Kings. It is our final grade of the season. We've done every player. We've done the coach. We've done the GM. Let's do the team as a whole. We got some audio for you. Was this year a disappointment? Was this year a failure? We'll do that next.
Up with the best in local sports.
They just make it interesting, you know?
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross
on Sacktown Sports.
Welcome back, Carmichael Dave, Jason Ross, taking you all the way until 10 a.m. where Styles and Watkins join us. Chris, you can text us at 916-339-1140. Feel free to hop in the YouTube chat. Just go to YouTube, search Sacktown Sports.
Careful in there.
And say hello and hi and all of that. Simone. Simone is in the chat.
What does Simone say?
Simone's just Simone.
Okay.
I know you like Harry Potter.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. We have the giggles, and we need to be professional. And that's a tough road to hoe here with us. So we're going to try to pull it together. The problem is we both have the giggles. and as soon as I get set, Jason starts giggling. And then as soon as he gets set, I start giggling. And I don't want to giggle.
It's like, don't giggle in class, and then that's all you do.
That's all you can do. Yeah. It's all you, that's all you can think about. let's talk about the Sacramento Kings.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So, let's start with some audio. We've been playing a lot. We've been very audio heavy on the team in general. Monty, Mike Brown, etc. Just a couple of quick pieces, and then what we're going to do is we're going to grade them, and we would love for you to join us. It's our final grades of the year. We'll start with Harrison Barnes. I'm going to skip all the Malik Monk stuff. If you haven't been listening, everyone wants Malik to come back, but it's a business. All right. Harrison talks about the mentality wasn't right in some of the games.
I think it's just finding consistency. I mean, I think when you look at some of these games that we've lost and you look at where the top five, top six teams in the West, I mean, those teams, they took care of business on the nights that they were supposed to. And I feel like a lot of times we won games, maybe we weren't, I mean, in light of today's circumstance, I don't want to say favored to win, but against teams that were up there in the standings. And there were games where, you know, we should have won, that we just didn't have the right mental approach. And it comes back to, you know, there's not always going to be, oh, there's going to be a tomorrow, there's going to be another game. You know, we get to the last 2 weeks of the season, right, and everyone's, you know, hyper-focused, the Dallas series, the New Orleans, Phoenix back-to-back, things like that. You know, looking at the standings, the last couple games, you know, those were those games matter. And, you know, the coaches have talked about it. You know, we talked about it as players early on in the season, right? But I think to actually go through that, you know, last year when we did it, at the number three seed, it's a little bit different. But this year, where those games actually mattered, it came back to bite us.
I thought that was one of the more interesting quotes of the entire postseason.
Not wrong. I mean, a lot of that was, there's so much truth in that.
That's the thing. And Harrison's one of those guys who's earned the right to be able to say that. And it's endearing, I think, to fans. Not that you want to hear that. But that, look, I understand, especially in the middle of the season, you don't want to dwell on failure. You don't want to dwell on pessimism. But it is just nice to know that they're aware of it on the same level fans are. And I don't mean this, I know that doesn't sound right. Like, obviously, these guys are aware that they lost the game, aware that they blew the lead, aware that they, of course they are. But in Harrison's case, you know, he makes it very clear that they weren't just aware of it. This is something they were talking about just like we were as fans. Like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. What is going on? What is the excuse? And just the acknowledgement alone goes a long way.
Yeah, it's a little bit like I remember during the year when they were really having serious free throw problems. And it got to the point where, do you actually talk about it anymore? Like, you know, it's, if I keep telling you there's a problem, then when you get into the next spot that it has an opportunity, it's like, oh yeah, we've missed a lot of free throws. I don't want to miss. Like, you've already got negative thoughts going in your head.
Right.
But you also have to acknowledge it. You have to practice it. So I don't think you can just go, oh yeah, we lost to Portland and that won't happen again. Like, well, you need to make sure it doesn't happen again. And then it did happen again and again and again and again. And in a year where you needed probably two more wins to get out of the play-in, we know there's more than two games out there that they let go. So that was a season. It was kind of a season-long thing that followed them.
one of the things that followed them around for the season, at least from a fan point of view, was Monty McNair's decision in the offseason and especially the trade deadline to stand pat, run it back, if you will. De'Aaron Fox talked about the consistency of the organization from a player point of view.
Obviously, I don't know what happens this summer, but just having that consistency of some guys that you know are going to be here, coaches that you know are going to be here, it gives you that confidence knowing that you're going to take that next step forward and not have to wonder what the foundation is going to look like. And I feel like you can look at Dallas. Like last year, they didn't – obviously, the year before, they made the playoffs. Last year, they didn't make the playoffs. This year, you know, they make a trade at the deadline, and they look like, honestly, the best team in the league for after the All-Star break. So those are just, like, little things that – you know, you look forward to, and having that consistency as an organization. And I mean, it's fun.
From a player point of view, I completely understand that. They're in that bubble. They've bonded with their teammates. They have a mission. You want to accomplish it with the soldiers you're there with, if you'll excuse the comparison. I understand that, but also, you know, if it ain't working, it ain't working. And
yeah. It's a tough one, right? We still don't know what was truly offered, what they could have looked at, what they could have done. I do think if you're making a bigger move, which I do anticipate that happening this offseason, mm-hmm. it's easier and probably cleaner to do it in the offseason so that yes. you have a full camp and spring training, preseason, and games to gather information and go, Oh, he constantly likes the ball here. I wasn't used to this player. Now I am. Where if you get a player in February where there's about 25 games to go,
right.
you do it, but that can be a little bit of a challenge. And sometimes you don't get your stride until even the next season.
Sure. And we saw that with Sabonis, as you mm-hmm. said, you know, him coming in. And it was a better team, but yeah. they really didn't figure it out until that training camp happened. Davion Mitchell, it was a learning year for him. His third year in the league out of Baylor, it was up and down. But I think the end was far better than the beginning.
I mean, I think for me, you just I learned a lot from this season. I kind of never been in a situation where I haven't played. I think all my life I've been playing and playing a lot of minutes. So I kind of learned a lot from this adversity. I mean, things that I need to work on, things that the role that they need me to play, I just got to do a better job at it. I mean, I think it also gave me confidence towards the end of the season when I was hitting shots and playing a big role in our conic success, even though we lost the last game. But, I mean, I think it goes into the offseason what I need to work on, work harder on. I think it a lot of things I need to work on. I'm finishing, passing, a lot of things I need to work on that I'll be ready for.
Okay. And I think it was a good learning. There's the one thing that's never in question with Davion, as we said before, is his work ethic.
Right.
He lives, he is the ultimate gym rat. It was an up and down season for him. I still don't know what kind of pro he's going to be. There are times, Jason, the defense is never a question. He is a well above average defender. It's the offense. There are times when I see him hit a corner three, this beautiful rainbow. It's just like, wow, look at that shot. There's times when he just flits to the basket for a nice, easy layup. There is a real starting point guard here.
Yeah.
And then there's times where it's like, man, God.
You know how near the end of the year you were having fun with those tweets? Like, I've seen enough, and it might be like 8-0 or whatever. You're like, that's it. I kind of felt that way early in the season on Davion. I don't know. I'm rooting for him to be great. I don't think it's – maybe it's just sometimes you need someone somewhere else and just different opportunity, different – see what you can get for him. Then as the year went on and he really wasn't playing, and then when he got back in the mix at the end, I went, well, you know what?
Yeah.
Maybe there is more there. So I'm with you on the you know, I love players that work that hard that are – I mean, he is basketball. That's all he cares about. So you always want players like that on your team. It's just what can they continue to get the most out of him in that role? And, you know, that's a question they're going to have to answer.
If there was one game that really kind of summed up, in a sense, Davion's growth this year, I would actually say it was the very final game of the season.
Regular season
against the Pelicans. Because in the first half, he sucked. He was bad in that game against the Pelicans. He was 1-4. He wasn't being aggressive. He wasn't looking for a shot. I think it got into his head. He was 1-4 at the half. He finished 4 of 9, 10 points, 2 boards, and Mike Brown ended up giving him 24 minutes, and I thought he played some pretty damn good defense on C.J. McCollum, who ended up with 7 points. Davion's first half sucked. I thought Davion's second half was just this side of sublime. Mm-hmm. It was excellent on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. And I think to your point, the I've seen enough 10 minutes into the game with Davion was you can take that to the bank. Mm-hmm. I think he's learned to battle through adversity within the game more this year than so far in his career.
That's a good sign.
We'll take a break when we come back. Couple more voice notes from the players, and then we'll grade out this team as we wrap up our coverage of the Sacramento Kings 2023-24 season next.
In the morning to get your sports fix.
Live and local.
The Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
I don't know what's going on this morning, but I wonder if someone's leaking the what do they give you at the dentist to make you
laughing gas?
Thank you. I don't know. I forgot my Nutri-Gain bar, so I can't say, like, somebody spike them. We just got the giggles today.
Maybe take out the laughing.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. My goodness gracious. Welcome in. Welcome back. Hello. As we are barreling towards the halfway mark of the program, and we're finishing up, Jason, our review of the Sacramento Kings. As the offseason is... Hey, is the offseason in full swing yet?
It is for them, unfortunately, right? I mean, well...
Yeah.
I'm sure the front office, because I would think they've got to be pretty soon having players in for workouts. For,
I don't think so.
You know, the draft lottery is, what, about 2 weeks away?
Yeah, that's right.
The drawing for it, at
least. How hilarious would it? You know what? Can I just say this right now? I'm not trying to jinx anything. Wouldn't this be the year the Kings get the number one pick? Down draft, supposedly.
So they say, yeah.
Like, I feel like this is the Purvis Ellison of drafts.
I always would take that, though.
Yeah.
Even if it's, like, the worst one, just because it feels like, one, you won something. The odds are really, really low.
Really low.
And then that could just give you a variety of options.
No one's thinking about getting a one pick.
No.
No one's.
I mean, literally, what it isn't like 0.001 or something.
It's something insane, because I remember, I think it took me the first try. I think it took me something like 39 times to get the one pick in the simulated lottery. So right now they're slated to pick 13th, and it's all but...
Oh, my gosh. I was here for it.
You saw it firsthand.
First try, you just got number one.
First try. Number one. That is weird, man. That is really weird. I think it's what you said. There's like, here you go. There is a 1.5% chance of the Sacramento Kings, excuse me, a 0.8% chance of the Sacramento Kings getting the number one overall pick.
And you just got it.
And we just got it after talking about it.
So we put in the rafters on this day. Dave got the number one pick.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hang the flipping banner, man. Okay.
What is the countdown? 11 days, 4 hours, 12
minutes
and 15 seconds till the draft lottery.
And then, of course, if you did get the number one pick, it sounds like Alexander Sarr, the 7'1", 19-year-old, is set to go one from Perth, the Australian.
Can't see who I recognize. Keep going.
Zachary Risache. Reed Shepard from Kentucky. Okay, point guard, shooting guard. Nikola Topic from Red Star. Entirely, come on, Nikola. We talked about this before. Nikola Jovic, Nikola Jokic, and Nikola Topic. Rob Dillingham from Kentucky at number 5. Stephon Castle from UConn at number 6. Another UConner, Donovan Klingon.
Oh, I like him. He'd be good for the Kings.
He would be good.
He's at, what do you have him, 8 there? 7, 8, 9?
He's, you know, it says 7. I mean, never know. It's going to be a general area. As of right now, according to this mock draft, at 13, the Kings are slated to take Tijon Salon. which is totally not how his name is pronounced. I guarantee it. From Cholet Basket.
What?
C-H-O-L-E-T. What is it? Probably Cholet.
Cholet Basket?
Cholet. And then, it's, yeah, Basket. Unless, that'd be cool if it was Cholet Basket. Hey, listen to Dave and Jason try to pronounce teams.
That they don't know about.
At all. 6'9", 203, just under 19 years old.
Where's your guy, Edie?
Zach Edie right now, around? Number 22.
Oh, 22.
Going to the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
I'm serious, man. If they're around 13, I don't know. They're not going to do it, but do worse things than Zach Edie. Just give it a shot. Who cares? He's not Sim Buller.
Right.
You know, he's not. He's got some form of skill. But, you know, I'm also the guy that's like, hey, oh, who was it last couple of years, player of the year? Luka Garza. Garza. Yeah, and then, oh, you know, Tyler Hansbrough is going to be a good pro. Mm-hmm. Luka Garza is going to be a good pro. Sean May is going to be a good pro. How many times have we seen that? Ah, anyway. All right, Domas Sabonis, frustrated not to be playing right now. Frustrated not to be playing right now.
Yeah, it's definitely very disappointing how it ended. You know, it's frustrating. You know, it's tough to even watch the playoffs, you know, knowing that we could be there and fighting.
Yeah, I agree, Domas. Kevin Huerter, also frustrated.
Frustrating season. Yeah, I would. Frustrating is definitely the word. Even before the injury, just a lot of ups and downs, a lot more downs this year than I think in previous years, and continuously trying to be positive and you know, letting work kind of and staying in the gym just kind of drive my mental state. And
Trey Lyles, disappointed.
I wouldn't say a failure, but it's definitely a disappointment. You know, coming off the year that we had last year, I think we all expected a little bit more this year. And I would say the injuries and kind of like self-inflicted wounds hurt us a lot, and I think we realize that. And it's definitely something for us to learn from for next season. And I think we have a group of guys that will learn from it. And when those opportunities next year present themselves, we're gonna approach it in a different manner, in a more professional and aggressive manner, for us to, you know, not make the same mistakes that we did this year.
One more quick note on Trey Lyles, Jason. We didn't get to this before. He talked about his decision to stay in Sacramento.
I think it helped out a lot. For me personally, I was able to, you know, have more in-depth relationships with some of the guys and the coaching staff and stuff like that, and felt like they looked at me as somebody with a voice and trying to, you know, be accountable and be a leader for the team. So definitely helped out a lot, and I still feel the same way that I did last year about this team, about this city. So
a lot of stuff we can play from Malik Monk. I'll play one I don't think we played originally. Obviously, we know he's a free agent. We know that's in the news. But I think he was asked, it looks like he was asked, if, amongst other things, Mike Brown helped elevate his game being here.
I don't think he helped me elevate my game. I think he put people on notice of what I can do by letting me play. I think my game was already elevated. I just needed an opportunity to show it. But, yeah, Mike did a great job with us, knowing all the down people we had that wouldn't talk, dealing with the people that me and Trey that really just spoke up a lot, and just trying to mesh all of us together. I think Mike did a great job in that.
That's such a Malik answer.
Yeah.
No, he didn't help me elevate my game. My game was already there. He gave me a chance to show it.
Shine.
The only person that we haven't really talked about, Jason, because we talked about the coaches, the GM, every player pretty much. I don't even know if it's possible to grade Vivek.
I feel like that's harder. Not that we can't try, but
you know, I
don't know where you'd go there with him.
Honestly, and I, this is going to sound like I'm insulting him, and I'm not. I mean this for any owner. I think if, and you never know what goes on behind the scenes, but we haven't heard any rumblings. I think if an owner like Vivek doesn't interfere with anything on the court, stays out of the way of the basketball decision-making, and shows up pretty much to every game and cheers on the team, that's an A. You know, look, I don't profess to know everything that happened behind the scenes, but I certainly haven't heard any crazy stories in a while.
Right.
I don't know what more we would want out of him. I don't want him making basketball decisions.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, to me, a perfect owner would be kind of that present. So yeah. you've got to know that they care and exist and, yeah. and you know, they're tangible, like you see them. Obviously, they spend. That's part of the business. And then they let the people that they hire do their jobs. It seems like, on the surface, that's all happening. I know when they made one of the deals, it was the Robin Lopez deal at the deadline, yeah. and it was for, like, cash considerations. Yeah. Like, oh, I don't think that was done in, like, the typical, or the way it was kind of done at the end, of, like, literally the money was needed.
Right.
I think it was like, oh, there's an opportunity. Let's just get a few bucks, and, yeah, he's not going to be on the team, and
yeah.
It was, I don't really fully grasp the move, but it wasn't done in the typical way that could be deemed. So
you had a chance to get some free money.
Yeah.
You took.
So it's like, yeah, why not?
Why not?
Know, didn't really impact the team. Sure, they got a little extra cash, but it wasn't like, hey, we need this extra cash because
we're
having trouble keeping the lights on. No, that's not the case.
No, I mean, plus down the road, that also, you know, when you're trying to balance the books, if you need to make a move and you need to send cash considerations, you know, it's not, as you said, this isn't a Maloof thing where, you know, they're actually grabbing cash.
Yeah. And then,
cash grab! Right.
To Vivek's credit, this is something I still remember way back when we had Jim Rome on, and Jim Rome came up here for one of the games and sat with him, and he said, you know, of all the things that I took in from the game, the one thing, and this still sticks with me because I don't know that I'd noticed it prior. Now I can't not notice it because Rome brought it up. He goes, the guy sits there, watches the entire game without a phone.
Yes.
Like, you know, there's plenty of people down courtside. I mean, look, everybody in the whole arena has their phone around. Right. And it's either looking at stuff, tweeting, taking a pic, whatever. It doesn't even matter what they're texting. He is locked into the game.
I think, honestly, the only time I've ever seen Vivek interact with a phone on the court is just what you said. Is
maybe
like
take a picture.
Pre or post-game picture. Right. I don't even know that that's his phone.
Right.
You know, plus people like that probably have phone carriers.
Maybe.
You know,
but
whatever.
I mean, but it's like he's watching the game.
Yeah, he is. And look, no one's playing a violin for Vivek. Guy's a multi-gajillionaire and owns an amazing asset. But let's also remember, too, he didn't live here.
Right.
He lives in Atherton.
Right.
So, you know, not only is he showing up for every game, but he's, you know, he's taking a trip up here. Now, he's flying a private plane up here. It's a 20-minute flight.
Still does it.
That, but, you know, it still does it. Point is this. I'm not trying to suck up to Vivek. I just been plenty hard on Vivek in the past. Yeah. Was hard on him about the A's thing. But when it comes to being a Kings owner, I don't have a ton of complaints this year.
Right.
Overall for the team, Jason, I'm going to give him a B-. I don't want to. I don't feel a C is right when you win mid-40s when this team never finishes 500. I also think the Warriors series win, or Warriors game win, was a really good memory, a moment. It was a moment, one of the happiest moments that we've had in a long, long time. And we argued before, maybe the biggest win since the Bibby shot. But it was a disappointment. The players echo that. Not a failure, a disappointment, I think.
Yeah.
And hopefully this is one of those take a tiny step backwards to take two steps forward seasons.
That's the way I would go. It's, I mean, like semantics, whatever, but failure seems too strong.
Yeah.
Disappointment 100% on the woulda, shoulda, couldas, the injuries to the losses that they should have had, free throws. I mean, there's some things they need to clean up, but I could also see if you scan forward and think things are going to be better next year, and maybe let's say they become a top 10 defense.
Sure.
And some people go, wow, where did that come from?
Well, it came from this year.
Yeah, they laid some foundation work here. It's not like they jumped from 28 to 10 next year. It's they did the work this year. So there was some growth in some areas, but certainly I would still say disappointment.
And if nothing else, man, when that final buzzer sounded against the Warriors and that play-in, that's about as electric as I've heard Golden 1 Center.
Pretty nice beam, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. It was electric. And it honestly made me think about switching to electric full time with my friends at American Energy Heating and Air, who wants you to switch to electric this spring and save big. Stay ahead of those spiking energy bills this summer. With up to $9,000 in rebates on a new ultra high efficiency comfort system. American Energy is providing huge rebates from SMUD as well as spring specials by installing one of the many incredibly efficient AC options available to you right now. Hey, get rid of those fluctuating gas bills in the winter and switch to year-round all-electric with American Energy. Let them perform a free in-home energy efficiency analysis and see where they can help you save for the warmer months ahead. These guys are the best. Learn more by calling 916-520-9990. That's 916-520-9990. 9990, AmericanEnergyAir.com. American Energy, making the uncomfortable comfortable. Hour two in the books. We move on to the second half of the program. We go back and recap the night in the NBA, including the Sixers pulling a victory from the jaws of defeat at Madison Square Garden. We'll get to it next.